You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you today?
Morena, I'm good, thank you.
Lovely to chat with you. It's been a bit of a crazy week for academics in Aotearoa, particularly those down in Otago. There's been some really big announcements from the university about restructuring of courses and a lot of jobs that are going to be either made redundant or lost. What's your thoughts on this? Obviously, you're an academic up here at Auckland University, but this is a pretty significant thing that's going on.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, COVID has played havoc with the higher ed sector, to be sure. So universities like Victoria and Auckland did redundancy packages quite early into the COVID. And then we saw we could call it a debacle at AUT and the various claims that were taken by staff there to the employment tribunal. So the Otago one sort of comes on the back of that. But I think what's really surprising is with the Otago case is that it's come, for starters, out of the blue.
Mm.
Secondly, it's one of our most long-standing universities. It has a medical school. There's so much about it in terms of infrastructure that, you know, puts it out there as iconic, really, as an institution. And what it seems like to me, and you know, I'm only reading what you're reading and having experienced it internally, is that it is the case that two things that have been raised that I think are correct. One is that the university management has the power to set its budget and its forecasting, and it doesn't look like this has been done particularly well because they've over-forecasted the amount of students that they were going to get. But the second thing is it's a sector that is really not particularly well funded comparatively, in terms of percentage of GDP put into research development and teaching in higher ed.
Now, the Tertiary Education Union, particularly the Otago branch, is saying that this is not the only option to lose all the staff that is currently what is being tabled. What's your thoughts around this? Because I guess we've seen, as you said, the ways that other universities have dealt with this to varying degrees of redundancy, and I'm sure we're probably going to see a bit more instability in the sector. But what are your thoughts around what the TEU is saying here, that this is not necessarily the only option?
Well, there's probably some subtext in the sense that we know the hierarchies of universities are very well paid. We know that professional staff cuts, so those who look after the students, very front-facing, that support the academic staff, are really necessary, and they've already been restructured multiple times, and we often don't hear about them because the noisiest are the academics, because they have a bit more positional power, I suppose, in the space. But I think it's really it's a challenge in the sense that it's not just about people costs. Even though we make up the largest component, there has been a lot of investment in buildings and making Otago this. I think the previous Vice Chancellor talked about it as being the Stanford or those posh unis of the South, and recalibrating the grounds and making it welcoming, which is great if you have the funds.
Mm.
But people and students ideally will be coming before legacy building, let's just say that.
Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to follow along with that one because it is quite a big shake-up. But let's talk a wee bit about former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. Yesterday it was just announced that she's going to be heading off to Harvard for a semester for a fellowship. Now, what's this all about, and what's interesting about this, Jennifer?
Well, you know, I work in politics and public policy here at the University of Auckland, and Harvard Kennedy School of Government, Public Leadership, and also Harvard Law School are renowned for, you know, working in what we might call this pracademic space, so that students can go there, but also they have online programs that have global reach into Africa and beyond sort of our traditional Western sort of customers, if you like, to some of these professional programs. And they bring in fellows from all walks of life, activists everywhere, to kind of ask those who enrolled in these programs to think about how to do principled, effective, ethical leadership, and a very future-focused in that regard. So I think this is really great, probably for Ardern herself, because she gets to study as well as, you know, teach. But just for Harvard itself, in terms, and for New Zealand, in the sense that we know Ardern has been a good ambassador for our country while she was Prime Minister, and this will sort of help keep, remind those around the world who are participating in these very high-level programs that New Zealand still exists.
And this is going to be sort of related to the work she's said she will be continuing to do on the Christchurch call as well, and there'll be a big focus on technology. This is an interesting thing, perhaps not an unsurprising thing, for Ardern to focus on in this part of her career. But do you have any thoughts on that, what that might mean for that particular venture?
Yeah, so she's got a couple of fellowships alongside each other, and so the one dealing with technology and governance of technology, which is really where it's going in terms of both AI, in terms of extremist violence online, and the way algorithms and various other sort of complicated things that I don't know enough about, but obviously impact our lives. That's where she's going to be doing some exploratory work to sort of complement, if you like, the work that she's doing and the special envoy status that she has in terms of the Christchurch call. This is important work. You know, there'll be technological whiz people at Harvard, I imagine, that she'll be able to tap into and get some of the real cutting edge research into how to combat extremism online and the ways in which nations, economies, but also international organisations need to be perhaps being a bit firmer in terms of practices with the global tech companies.
Well, let's talk about the current Prime Minister, Chris Hipkins. He headed over to Australia, and now we've got quite an interesting new sort of way that our citizenship for New Zealanders in Australia is going to be happening. What's the big takeaways here, and is it a significant change? I mean, I know people are talking about it like that.
Yeah, it is. Like, so, well, I'm a dual citizen. You know, my partner is, we moved there in 1993 so I could do my PhD. And back then, it was very easy for New Zealanders to move to Australia, to get citizenship within a couple of years, to work for government, to claim, to be able to get medical cover and so on. And over time, this has changed. And slowly, New Zealanders have become even more, and their presence in Australia, much more of a political football on both sides of politics over there, to be honest. It started with, you know, with Paul Keating. Anytime the labour market is loose and there's and unemployment is high and New Zealanders are there, we become the group that needs to be, you know, dealt with. And so John Howard, you know, changed the visa rules and changed the pathway to citizenship rules in 2001, and these have become very challenging for New Zealanders who've never believed, you know, never realised that they needed to sort of start trying to work and save money to get citizenship if they weren't going to be disadvantaged during bushfires and so on. So the new visa, the special category visa for New Zealanders stays in place, but all of those who are currently on it from 1st of July will be able to apply for citizenship. It's not going to cost the earth. It's going to be like $470 Australian. So this is going to be important retrospectively for families living there, but also, you know, already the New Zealand media are portraying it as a risk to, you know, will lead to more brain drain and so on. But I think for those families that sit across both sides of the Tasman, this is a very important development.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
You too. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.